This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards. The U.S. Supreme Court today hears arguments testing whether medical clinics that offer abortion services may apply a tough anti-racketeering law against protesters who use threats and violence to shut down clinic business. NPR Legal Affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports.
Today's case does not involve peaceful demonstrations, but clinic invasions, blockades, and assaults. This is the second time the case has been before the nation's highest court. In 1994, the justices ruled unanimously that a coalition of clinics could proceed with their lawsuit against militant anti-abortion activists who were avowedly trying to shut down abortion clinics. The lawsuit was brought under the Federal Racketeer Influence Corrupt Organization Act, better known as RICO. Although the law was originally passed to fight organized crime, it is broadly written and the Supreme Court has upheld its use well beyond mob cases. In this case, the National Organization for Women alleged that anti-abortion protesters conspired to close down clinics by using violence and the threat of it. In short, the clinics argued that they were deprived of their right to operate a business. In 1998, a jury in Chicago ruled unanimously that the activists named in the lawsuit had engaged in dozens of enumerated acts of real or threatened violence to form a pattern of racketeering activity. The jury awarded the clinics $258,000 in damages, and the judge in charge of the case later imposed a nationwide court order barring such activities in the future. A federal appeals court upheld the judgment, and the anti-abortion activists appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, which will hear arguments in the case today. Jay Sekulow, representing the anti-abortion group Operation Rescue, argues that if the high court upholds the RICO judgment, the effect on protests will be profound.
If we lose this case, that it would apply then to Dr. King. It would apply to the temperance movement of the 1920s. You'd apply it to abolitionists, environmentalists, animal rights groups like PETA. It would apply across the board. You would now take a category of activity, civil protest, which we have a long history of civil disobedience in the United States, and you would make it basically a federal crime, RICO. And that's a very, very dangerous move.
But Faye Clayton, representing the clinics, calls that assertion nonsense, and she notes that none of the mainstream pro-life groups has joined in this case to defend these aggressive tactics, not the National Right to Life Committee or the National Conference of Catholic Bishops. In this case, says Clayton, the loose-knit affiliation of groups that called itself PLAN, the Pro-Life Action Network, is pretty much on its own.
In fact, the Pro-Life Action Network has called the nonviolent groups wimps. Early on, they eschewed the standard protected kinds of conduct like speech, lobbying, working on legislation, picketing, lawful things like that, and they turned immediately to whatever force and violence was necessary to make the clinics and the women give up their rights.
The proof presented at trial included evidence of physical attacks on patients, doctors, clinic staff, and police, plus evidence of destruction of medical equipment, supplies, and other clinic property. In Pensacola, Florida, staff members were pushed downstairs, clinic offices were vandalized, and medical equipment destroyed. In other places, evidence showed PLAN members regularly blocked access to clinics, beat on cars trying to enter, hit and clawed patients and personnel, whether or not they were involved with abortions. In Los Angeles, for example, PLAN members grabbed the arms and legs of an ovarian surgery patient who was trying to enter a clinic for postoperative care. PLAN members pulled her hair, struck her, and beat her with an anti-abortion sign until her sutures ruptured and she passed out. In evaluating the evidence, the jury was instructed that only crimes committed intentionally and with PLAN's approval could trigger liability. And at the close of the trial, the jury was specifically asked whether any of the violations they found were based on blockades of clinic doors or sit-ins alone. The jury responded no. Joseph Scheidler, the anti-abortion activist who conceived of the Pro-Life Action Network, has not always denied that violence and destruction of property took place.
We are selective. When the law is so bad that it allows for the murder of children, the destruction of 5,000 babies every day, 1.6 million a year, we have to set aside that law in favor of a higher law, thou shalt not kill.
But in this case, Scheidler and other PLAN leaders are asserting that their activities were not extortion and did not violate the anti-racketeering law because they did not seek to obtain any property through the use of force and threats. Lawyer Jay Sekulow contends that the clinics, by claiming these activities are extortion, are trying to make an impossible distinction between the protests at issue in this case and other widely admired protests.
The distinction that I don't think exists between that and the activities of Martin Luther King in the 1950s and 60s blockading access to the lunch counters and the lunch counter sit-ins, where they stopped their businesses, basically.
That's absolutely false.
Clinic lawyer Faye Clayton.
Martin Luther King taught his followers not to block entrance. The Klan protesters are more like George Wallace blocking the doors at Tuscaloosa. They're like the Ku Klux Klan blocking the doors at Old Miss in 1962. When it's the wrongful use of fear or force or violence, as Klan did, using actual force and threats of more force to prevent people from going about their lawful business, that's extortion.
In the last analysis, though, it is not the money damages that anti-abortion activists care about as much as the nationwide court order forbidding acts of intimidation. The court order means that anyone who violates it can be cited for contempt and put in jail, and it is a powerful tool to protect clinics and to foil certain protest tactics. Prior to the nationwide court order, clinic operators said they were simply unable to keep up with the onslaught from their opponents. Lawyer Clayton says that local law enforcement was often overwhelmed. Using regular criminal laws didn't work either, she says, because offenders only got short sentences and soon were back doing the same thing again. Even when there were local court orders, it didn't stem the tide, she says, because it wasn't the leaders who went to jail. It was the foot soldiers.
The capos got away. Joe Scheidler only spent about 2 days in jail.
All that changed, she says, with the nationwide court order, called an injunction, that followed the trial.
Just by sending the injunction to either the marshal or the sheriff or the state's attorney or the clinic, it seems that the violence doesn't happen. So it's been extraordinarily effective in preventing violence over the last 4.25 years.
In contrast, lawyer Jay Sekulow, representing the protesters, sees the injunction as a way to chill expression.
And the idea that you can get an injunction against all pro-life activities within the civil disobedience context anywhere in the country, I think, is a very, very damaging precedent.
The outcome of this case is, in reality, probably less important than it was when the clinics first undertook this lawsuit 16 years ago. Since then, Congress has enacted a federal law guaranteeing access to abortion clinics. On the other hand, nothing has been as powerful in suppressing force and violence as the injunction in this case. When the lawsuit went to trial in 1994, clinic violence was rampant. The numbers did not go down much, even after passage of the Federal Freedom of Access to Clinics law passed. But immediately after the injunction was issued, the numbers dropped precipitously. According to the National Abortion Federation, the number of murders dropped from 4 to 0, assaults from 7 to 2, acid throwing from 8 to 0, arson from 11 to 8, attempted murder from 8 cases to none, clinic blockades dropped from 25 to 3, and arrests from 217 to 5. Now the Supreme Court will decide whether the tool used to achieve those results is legal. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.